So I've told you how much I have delight in Christmas music and Christmas movies, and I have like an obnoxiously large tolerance for it all. So we've been watching a lot of Christmas movies in our house. And one of our favorites that we've watched a couple times already is It's a Wonderful Life. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with It's a Wonderful Life. It's a classic, so maybe you've seen it. If you haven't yet, do yourself a favor. You got to know George Bailey. He's a good guy. And it tells his story, and he's this man who sacrifices what he wants again and again and again to take care of his family and to take care of his town. He gives up going away to college. He gives up traveling to help take care of his father's business. He gives it up again so that his brother can take a job in another city. He gives up going away on his honeymoon and all of their money to help take care of the town when there's a run on the bank. And we actually meet him at the movie at this really incredibly terrible moment of his life. And I know it's funny because I'm watching it with my kids and I'm like, you know what, this is actually more intense because we've glossed it over as a Christmas movie. But his life reaches such a desperate moment. It's so hard. He's at this absolute breaking point that he wishes he had never been born. He gets to this moment where all of this money goes missing from the bank. His uncle misplaces it. They can't find it anywhere. He's running around. He's upset. He's stressed out. It's so terrible. He's facing bankruptcy in jail, and there's nothing he can do about it. And he actually sits down and says, I wish I'd never been born. I'm actually worth more dead than I am alive. And at this point, the angel Clarence shows up. He gets to take him like back through his life and show him what life really looked like if he had actually never existed. He lets his wish come true and he takes him to a different version of his life and shows him, if you never existed, this is what it would look like. And everything is different. The town is different because nobody kept Mean Mr. Potter in check. His family doesn't recognize him. His wife doesn't know who he is. His kids don't exist because he wasn't there. His brother doesn't exist because he wasn't there to save him. Mr. Gower's life is a mess because he wasn't there to get him out of trouble when he accidentally put the poison in the medicine. His mom doesn't know who he is. And everything is so much more bleak and a mess because he doesn't exist. And what he gets this glimpse of is, even in the midst of this terrible, bleak circumstance, he really gets a picture of how wonderful his life really is. And just like that, he gets to go back, and he's back exactly where he left off, and the circumstances are still bleak, and he's still facing the same hard times, but his heart has shifted. And in this new perspective he has, he now appreciates the drafty old house and his kids and his wife, and he's so grateful because he got to see what life would have been like without them. But then to take it even one step further, the very town that he made sacrifices to help, now they show up to help him. And all of them come together and they're throwing money on the table to help rescue him out of this dire circumstances. So bankruptcy and jail are no longer going to happen. And he gets to see how much all of these people really do care for him and love him and are there to support him. And of course, it ends with a song because it's a Christmas movie and you tie a nice little bow around it and everybody feels good and the bell rings and the angel gets his ring. But our life isn't a Christmas movie, right? It'd be great because it happens like in a nice, concise hour and a half and you go from bad to great in that spectrum and all of a sudden it ends well and everybody's happy and everybody's singing and everything's delightful. But life isn't that way. Instead, what we find is we are slogging our way through the hard. We are pushing our way through the stress and fighting forward day after day after day, wondering what is it all for? All of the problems and all of the mess and all of the hard and all of the struggles and all of the obstacles that we face, what do they all amount to in the end? Now, George Bailey got this wonderful opportunity where we got to see what life would be like without him, and he got to fully appreciate his life differently, and he got to have such a great perspective, and his heart changed. But even more than that, he got to have this great moment where at rock bottom, his very worst, his very lowest, he got to see how many people really genuinely loved him and cared for him, and how much he was really loved. Now, we don't get to wave a magic wand over our life and say, what would the world be like and how much terrible it would have been if we didn't exist? And we don't get to have that kind of magic angel-like experience to show us a different version of our lives. But we do have unique moments like today, like where we are right now, to just stop and consider our lives. God gives us this wonderful opportunity to just consider where we are in the life that we're facing. And what if, I know we can't wave a magic wand, but what if we could shift our perspectives? And what if just changing our perspective changed the way we saw our life? Or what if we just had a shift in our understanding and it opened up to us a new future? Or what if we just got to look at God a little bit differently and seeing what he might be doing could lead us to a whole new hope in him? And when we ask these really important what-ifs, what if we just push that a little bit further? What if these hard times we're facing, they're not meant to be a punishment? What if these painful things we go through aren't God actually being against us? What if the loss we're facing isn't actually the end? What if instead it got to be something else entirely? What if we just shifted our perspective a little bit and we tried a different angle to look at all of these things that are happening in our life and we bring a different understanding on the outcome of them? To do that, we're going to look at what Paul said in his letter to his friends in Corinth. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 1, starting at verse 8. Listen to what he says. He says, "We do not want you to be unaware, brothers and sisters, of the affliction we experienced in Asia. For we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. Indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death, but that was to make us rely not on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. On him we have set our hope that he will deliver us again." Now, I love where Paul starts because it's easy to miss and go on to like the heart of what he's saying, but it's very, very important that we start where he starts. I don't want you to be unaware. I don't want you to be surprised. I don't want you to be caught off guard or uninformed. What we faced was incredibly hard. It was so hard and so burdensome, we actually thought that the only option we had was death. Now, here's why I think this is really, really important. Somewhere along the way, this idea gets planted in our head that when we say yes to following God, that when we say yes to Jesus and we go all in with him and we work to like instill the right values and make the right decisions and live a healthy lifestyle, that somehow life should get easier. That somehow we're following God and nothing bad should ever happen. Or somehow we get this idea in our hearts that like, I'm all in for Jesus. He should be all in for me and I shouldn't have to face anything bad ever again. And then something bad happens and it kind of shakes our whole foundation and we're like, God, what's up? And we're surprised by it or we feel blindsided by it. Like, but God, I'm in. I'm doing the right things and I'm serving you and I'm following you and I'm trying to be generous. And we're like, why would this happen? I'm a good person. I don't deserve it. And we get surprised when we say yes to God and bad things still happen or we still face hard times or these terrible circumstances get us right back in the loop of them. But what Paul is saying is just as true to us today as it was 2,000 years ago. It's like, I don't want you to be surprised that we faced hard times. Because nowhere in the entire history of God at work and the people following him does it ever happen where somebody says yes to Christ and life just magically gets easy. I mean, we don't have any example of that happening ever. But in fact, what we see is what Christ modeled for us. Christ modeled a life of service to God so much that he suffered and he agonized and he faced pain beyond what we can understand. But he didn't just face the hard. He did it with a nobility and a fierce faith that shows us another way. Friends, I don't want us to be surprised when something hard happens. It doesn't mean God is against us. It doesn't mean God is punishing us. It doesn't mean that the conclusion we draw when something bad happens that we aren't doing enough right stuff for God, and if we would just have prayed harder or had more faith, then magically everything would be healed. That's not it at all. And look at the conclusion that Paul draws. He said, this trouble that we faced, it was hard. And he doesn't tell us exactly what happened in Asia, but we know it was so hard, that pressure they felt, that it was beyond anything they were capable of. It was pressure so intense that they felt squeezed in by it, and there was nothing that they could do. He said it was so bad, so beyond their ability, so beyond anything they knew how to manage, that they absolutely despaired of life. And this phrase here in the Greek, it actually means the total unavailability of an exit. Now, let me give you an image of this. Have you ever been in a car accident before? And sometimes car accidents kind of sneak up on you and you don't know what's happening. But every once in a while, there's the car accident where you see it's going to happen and there's nothing you can do about it. You see in the rearview mirror, there's a car coming towards you and there's nothing that you can do. Or you look up and you realize that you don't have enough time to stop before you're going to slam into the thing that's in front of you and there's nothing you can do. There's literally no option. There's no way out. You see the crash coming, but there's nothing you can do to change it. And that's the imagery that Paul's using here. They were in such a hard place. They knew something bad and terrible was coming, but they had no options. They had no way out of it. There was nowhere they could go to get away from it. It was inevitable that death was going to happen. It was so bad. But he says right there, when we were so utterly burdened beyond our strength that we were sure life was over, God showed up. He said, in this moment that was so hard and so intense and it was imminent and threatening, God showed up and delivered us. He rescued us from what terrible thing was going to happen. And look at the conclusion Paul reaches. He doesn't say God was punishing us. God was trying to teach us a lesson for what we had gotten wrong or something that we had done. Instead, he said, let me show you what I discovered about God. The very God who has the power to raise the dead, to bring Christ back to life, to do impossible things. He's also the very same God willing to show up in our lives in our hardest moments, our overwhelming stress, our affliction, our trouble, our burdens. And he's the very God who can rescue us and set us free. That's the conclusion Paul drew when he faced a moment that was so hard. And he said, I don't want you to be surprised when hard things come. We faced hard times. We face them, but God is the one we can rely on. God is the one who is dependable. God is the one who can do what we cannot. And in this moment, he discovered the incredible, unending reliability of God. Look, Paul was a smart man. He was educated. He was well off. He had marketable skills in his day. He could get a job and he could make money and he could take care of himself and do what needed to be done to not be a burden on others. We know that, right? We're really good at taking care of ourselves and being self-reliant and self-dependent, and we don't want to be a burden, and we know how to get it done, and we're sufficient, and we have, you know, the abilities and the strength and the capabilities. We know what needs to be done. We certainly don't want help or pity, right? Like, don't look at me with pity. We've got this. We can figure it out. But here's what happens. We were never supposed to do it by ourselves. No matter how strong we are, no matter how capable we are, we were never meant to do it by ourselves. Paul was a strong man. He had a lot of capabilities. He had a lot of strengths. But look, he was called by God to do impossibly hard work and took him right over the edge of what he was capable of doing. All his strengths, all his capabilities, they weren't enough in some of the hardest circumstances that he faced. Because look, God called him to go share the gospel of Jesus Christ in place after place after place. And it wasn't easy. He challenged religious authority and he challenged kings and queens in the Roman government. And he challenged these sources of power that did not want to be challenged. And look, churches popped up and lives were saved, and we read about the New Testament church spreading. The hand of God was upon it, but it was not easy, because we also read that Paul was threatened again and again and again. He was beaten. He almost died. He was thrown in jail. He faced deprivation and loss and disappointment, and it was not easy. He was right past the edge of his capabilities, but Paul kept pushing forward. not because of what he could do, but because of his reliance on what God could do. What he drew from these circumstances, what he learned was he could rely on God to show up and do more than he could do on his own. He learned how incredibly capable God is. That it's not about what we can do on our own. Look, we know our limitations, right? We've all been there. We've all faced the moment where we passed, and then some, what we are capable of. And we've all had the repercussions of not having enough to deal with what needed to be dealt with. We know our breaking point, right? We know how much we can handle and how much we can carry. And we know when we break and buckle under the pressure of it because we can't hold it up on our own. We know what we are capable of. It's not about that. It's not about what our government is capable of. We know what they can do, and it's beyond that. It's not what we can do on our own. Instead, it's what God can do. Because, friends, what is overwhelming for us is not for him. What is too heavy for us to carry has never been a burden to God. What ruins us, God can handle. What we are lacking, God can fill in. What seems like the very end of our rope, the very edge of our limitations, is the very place God is able to show up and do the impossible. Look, faith isn't built in the easy, comfortable moments of life. It's not. Faith is forged in the struggle and the pain and the harshest realities that we face in our day-to-day life. When we're looking to God to say, the only way tomorrow happens is if you show up. The only way that I take one more step forward is with you, because it's too much. The pain is too much. The stress is overwhelming. The loss is too hard. It's too much. Help. And we fully rely on him. But to do that, we have to have the reality, the moment where we have a full understanding of, I got to stop trying to rely on only what I can do. And I got to turn to God and rely on him instead. When's the last time we just fully relied on God? We just turned to him and said, there are no exits available to me. There is no way out. I have no options. I cannot do this on my own. I need your help. When was the last time we just depended on God to see us through? We just leaned on his strength to give us enough to do what needed to be done for that day. Or we just let God give us what we needed to do the next right thing, no matter how ridiculously hard that it was to do, no matter how ridiculously impossible that it seemed. Here's what I know. God is capable, and he is so much more able than we tend to remember. He's so much more capable than we tend to rely on. I was reminded this week, I was reading the prophet Isaiah. Listen to what he said about God. He said, the Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all of the earth. He never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. But those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. Isaiah reminds us just how incredibly able God is. We know our limitations, but God does not have the limitations that we have. We know what's exhausting to us. We know how far we can go on our own. We know how heavy a load that we can carry. But look at what we are reminded of. We have access to a God who does not get tired, who does not grow weak, who does not grow weary. Because of Jesus Christ, we can lean on the one who will give us power and strength to see us through. Because of Christ, we have the abilities to just stand in these gaps, not alone, not by ourselves, not without resource. Saying yes to Jesus Christ doesn't mean we won't ever face a hard time. It doesn't mean we won't ever experience hardship and struggle. But it does mean that when we do, we have an incredible resource to see us through. What it does mean is we have access to one who knows what it means to suffer, who knows what it means to face hardship and loss, who looked death in the eye and came out the victor. When we say yes to Jesus Christ, it does not mean life will be easy, but it does mean we have access to one who will see us through the darkest of nights and the hardest of life experiences. What if we just invited Christ to stand in the gaps of our life this week, the gaps that we all feel, the gaps in nobody understanding? They want to. They've got a lot of really good one-liners to say, you know, when God closes a door, he opens a window. I don't want a window. I want the door open, right? People mean well, but they don't understand. What if we invited Christ to stand in that gap with us when nobody else understands? What if we invited Christ to stand in the gap where we just need help? We just need help because we cannot do it by ourselves. What if we invited Christ to stand in the gap of we're out of resources? We've been stringing along as best as we can, but we don't know how we're going to piece it together one more time. And we say, Christ, please stand in this gap with me and help see me through. What if we ask Christ to stand in the gap of our relationships? Some of us have giant holes this season that nothing can fill. The loss is real and it's present. And we just say, Christ, would you please stand with me here? Help fill in this gap. Because when we do, what we find is Christ stands with us. And in these gaps, he reminds us of hope. And hope is the thing that changes everything. Look at what Paul reminds his friends. Says if God could show up and deliver us from such an excruciatingly hard time, if he could rescue us from what seemed impossible, why couldn't he do the same for us again? If God could show up and do what nobody else could do, why couldn't he do the same for us now? We're putting our hope, we're betting our future on him that he will deliver us. And he gives us that same reminder today. Why couldn't God show up again today? For thousands of years, he's been doing the impossible. For thousands of years, he's met people in unbearable circumstances and shown them the way out. Why couldn't the God, who is so much more capable than any of us, show up again and do the impossible in our lives? That's where we find hope. We find hope in the promise of what God might do even when things seem bleak and unbearable. Ray Johnston wrote this incredible book about hope called The Hope Quotient. And he said, this is what happens when people lose hope. He said, when we lose hope, we lose our ability to dream for the future. Despair replaces joy. Fear replaces faith, and anxiety replaces prayer. He said, insecurity replaces our confidence, and tomorrow's dreams are replaced by nightmares. He said, but the greatest gift that we give anybody is hope. Because here's what hope does that nothing else can do. He said, hope liberates. It releases you from the grip of the past. You are not defined by who you once were. Yesterday's regrets do not have to dictate who you can become in the future. Hope frees you from all of the pain that you've experienced in the past. But then hope motivates. It helps you bounce back. It gives you the encouragement you need to press forward even when life is hard. Resilience is an incredible life skill. And the truth is, it's learned. It's not inherent in any of us. It is a skill that can be learned that enables us to bounce back, not unscathed, not untouched by hardship or loss or pain, but to bounce back to life, taking with us what we've learned in the struggle. It's not the bad that tells us who we are. It's not the bad that has a hold on who we can become, because evil never gets to have the final say. Instead, every one of us is capable of learning the life skill of resilience to bounce back into life. And he said, third, hope initiates. It sets you free to dream. There's something so incredibly powerful with hope that says, there's more to come. Dream for the future of what it might be. It gives us the ability to look beyond just the circumstances of right now and see who we might become, what we could do, what we could be. And then fourth, he said, hope activates. Hope is the fuel that makes the world a better place. He said it's the challenge to live it out every single day. Because here's the contrast. Discouragement says, that's it. The best has already happened. The good old days are gone. You've already lived through the peak of your life. You've already had all the best experiences. Nothing good is going to come after this. It only goes downhill from here. There's only worse on the horizon. Discouragement robs us of any ability to believe that anything better could happen. But hope does just the exact opposite. Hope says the best is yet to come. The power of hope is God isn't done yet. God hasn't finished all that he's going to do, and our hope is in him. We have an optimistic view of the future because Christ isn't done. There are lives to be saved and futures to be redirected. There are souls to be redeemed and families to be restored. God isn't done yet because we don't know what he might do next. And hope says the best is yet to come because God isn't finished. And we refuse to quit on life until we see what God could do next. Friends, what if the hardest things we're facing right now, they're not meant to break us? They're not meant as a punishment. It's not that God has turned his back on us. What if instead, right where we are, God wants to meet us and fill us with hope? What if God wants to remind us we aren't facing these things alone? The hardest problems we face, we are not in them alone. We are not fighting by ourselves. God is with us. Christ is on our side. He's willing to stand with us in the gaps and help us fight our way through. Paul reminds us that he is capable of delivering us. He is capable of seeing us through, and that we can depend on him, and we will not be disappointed because of it. One of the best gifts that God has given us is the freedom of choice. We get to choose. Every single one of us gets to decide, what am I going to do next? We aren't automatons. We don't just move the way we are directed. We have this free will, this ability to choose what we are going to do next. But how do we choose? That's the question. Listen to what John Maxwell said. So there are people who have had it better than you and done worse. And there are people who've had it worse than you and they've done better. The circumstances really have nothing to do with getting over your personal history. Past hurts can make you bitter or better. The choice is yours. Every single one of us gets to look at our life, and we get to choose how we perceive the things that we've experienced. Remember what we said, stress isn't the enemy. Stress itself isn't the thing that's bad. It's what we bring to bear about the stress, the judgment we place on it, the way that we look at it, the way that we process it, how we think about stress. That's the margin that we get to choose right there. And we get to choose no matter our circumstances. you can admit there are people who have been way better off than us, and they were worse for it. There are people who have been way worse off than us, and they're better for it. Every single one of us gets to choose how we perceive our life. And God's given us the ability and the tools that we need to not be bitter, but to be better because of it. God's given every single one of us the ability to choose hope and joy instead of bitterness and despair. But it requires a choice, and it requires a decision every single day how we process the life that we are living. So I want to give us one more tool to deal with it. I read this incredible Harvard Business Review article, and it was written by Aaliyah and Thomas Crum, and it said, stress can be a good thing if you know how to use it. I read it because I'm like, really? That sounds made up to me. I need more information than that. But listen to what they said. They said, pursuing a stress-free life often causes more stress down the line. Problems compound, and by failing to face our more intense challenges, we never overcome them. They said, here's what happens. We experience something hard, and it hurts. We don't want to feel the hurt again, so we do everything we can to avoid it. And so we say, I'm going to make life decisions that protect me from getting hurt, that protect me from getting stressed. I'm going to avoid it. I'm going to numb it. I'm going to dodge it. I'm going to bury it. I am an expert at avoidance. It doesn't have to be there. And so rather than facing the thing that hurts, facing the thing that's hard, rather than dealing with the thing that's stressful, we try to pursue a stress-free life and make decisions to help us avoid the problems. But the problem is nobody lives a stress-free life. It is impossible. And what we find is we actually create more problems for ourselves. We actually compound the pain. We make life harder for ourselves trying to pursue a stress-free existence. Instead, what if we leaned into the stress and used these tools to help us process them in a different way? Because they said when we do, what happens is we find unexpected benefits from the stress. It reminds us that we care. It connects us with the most challenging and important aspects of our life. And they said, in fact, what happens is there's two mindsets. There is the stress is enhancing mindset or the stress is debilitating mindset. We get to make a choice between the two. But what they found in their research and their studies is people who adapted the stress is enhancing mindset, they were better off. They were healthier. They were able to process the negative effects of stress differently and perform at a higher level. So they said, let me give us three steps to respond to the pressure of life. When we face hard, challenging moments, when the pressure feels so intense that it's squeezing us in and we have no option and no exit, here's three tools that are very tangible that we can practice this week. Write these down if you're taking notes in the app, on your bulletin, in your phone, wherever's a good place. Just try them this week and see what might happen. Here's the first one they said. Here's how we respond. Number one, we see it. We name or label the stress that we're feeling. So what happens is when you feel that stress bubbling up and it's connected to a family member or it's connected to a job performance or it's connected to somebody's health or connected to impossible expectations or loss or whatever it is, you feel the stress bubbling up, you purposefully acknowledge it and you name it. This is what I'm stressed about. And what happens is, they said, when we do this, it lets you pause your visceral reaction to the stress. We are wired to physically respond to stress in our life. Our heart rates increase. Our sweat gets up. We get the jitters or we get the shakes or we get hives or we can't breathe. All of these are reactions to stress. And we emotionally respond. We physically respond when the stress bubbles up, right? It's that 2 o'clock in the morning, our mind can't stop pacing our way through reaction. So what happens is we stop, and instead of letting the loop run or letting the physical response overwhelm us, we stop and say, here's what I'm stressed out about. And we put a name to it. We don't hide from it. We don't act like it doesn't exist. We don't try and bury it down or numb it or avoid it or watch 5 hours of Netflix holiday movies to make it go away. We name it and we said, this is real. This is the thing that I'm stressed out about. This is the emotion. This is my reaction. And we just write it down. And it's enough of a pause that your physical emotion doesn't have to overwhelm you. And you get enough of a pause, a break, to choose a different response. So what happens is when we see it, the next step that we do is we own it. So we see it first and we name it. And then the second thing we do is we own it. Because here's what we need to recognize. We tend to stress more and more intensely about the things that matter to us. They're personal. The stakes are high. What happens is, we know what we care about, and we tend to stress the most over things that are connected to the things that matter the most to us. Our family, our friends, our relationships, paying the bills, all of these big things that the stakes are so high. And so the next thing we have to do is we have to own it. Here's what they asked. Do you really expect that raising a child, running a business, living a life of impact, recovering a loss would be easy? Somewhere along the way, we accepted the lie that this should all be easier than it is. Somewhere along the way, we accepted the myth that everybody else had it easy and we're the only ones who've ever had it this hard. And we've got to confront that really huge lie that we've accepted and say, why would we think that is true? Whoever said living a life that matters would be easy? Whoever said that raising human beings to be decent people in the world would be easy? Whoever said that physical loss or any type of sickness, it's hard and it's exhausting, and it's a lie to say that it isn't, or nobody else has ever faced it the way that we are? He said, owning your stress doesn't necessarily make the cold, dark nights go away, but they will likely be a bit more tolerable as you discover a sense of motivation and meaning. So you name it. You label the thing that you stress about, and then you own it. You say, this matters. My relationships matter. Health matters. Loss matters. And you own it as personal and yours. And then here's the last thing you do. The third thing you do is you use it. I'm going to give these suggestions. They're not easy, but they're doable. They're not easy, but they are absolutely things that we can practice. Listen to what they said. The body stress response was not designed to kill us. No matter how it feels in the moment, it is not designed to kill us. Instead, it can help boost our body and mind to help us grow and meet the demands of the life that we face. They said the issue isn't the stress response, but how we channel or use the response. We all have a response to stress. The response itself isn't bad. It's how we use it. It's how we direct it. It's how we process it. So I'm going to give you two examples. The first one is the day-to-day stress that we meet, right? The work expectations, a speech you have to give, a test that's coming up, problems at work, negotiations. Okay, just these day-to-day stress problems that we're trying to solve. Those stress comes up, and we feel it. They said, what if you reframed the stress as excitement? Again, it's not easy, but it's doable. So what you say is, the second you know the stress, you own it as yours, you say, this is an opportunity. I feel stressed, but I'm excited for the chance to do this, right? Instead of the miserable, this is terrible, I hate it, I can't believe I have to do this, I'm the only one who has to do it, everything's over and terrible. You've complained before, I know you have. Instead of that, we say, this is an opportunity, this is a chance, this is a unique moment. I can be excited about the chance that I have, and we reframe the stress as excitement. Some of those jitters we feel could go 50-50 either way, and we could say, it's not stress, it's excitement. We could say it enough until it becomes true, right? All right, but let's be honest. There are some really complicated situations that we can't do that with, right? Ongoing conflict with your spouse is hard to say that you're excited about. Health problems, you absolutely can't say, I'm excited, I can't wait to go to the doctor again and spend bajillions of dollars, woo, right? That's just not going to happen. The loss of somebody you love, there's no way you can label that as excitement. So instead, in these situations, we can still reframe it just different. Instead of reframing the stress we feel as excitement, we can reframe them as an opportunity to learn something that is inherent to the stress that we feel. These stresses that we encounter, they are part of the cycle of life. Nobody goes through life untouched by grief or heartbreak or loss. All of us do. But we are able, if we will just stay open and not close ourselves off in the moments, to say, this is inherent to doing life. This is part of the deal of the life that we live. I can still garner strength in the process. I can still acquire toughness in the way that we make our way through. There are awarenesses that can be learned. There are perceptions that can be gathered. There is mastery, appreciation, meaning, strength and priorities, relationships that can be grown, even in the hardest cycles of life that we face, if we will just stay open in the process. Now listen, practicing these three things is not going to make our life stress-free. It's not going to make hard things go away, but it is going to put us in a place where we could just shift our perspective and maybe see things a little bit different and maybe use these moments as an opportunity to grow and move forward. Friends, God has given every single one of us the ability to choose hope, even in the struggle of life. God has given every single one of us the ability to hope, no matter how dark and hard the moment may seem. But he also offers us a promise in the process. No matter how hard it is, no matter how stressful or overwhelming or unbearable it is, Christ is able to meet us in the hardest moments of life and see us through. When we say yes to following Jesus Christ, he is just as able to deliver us today as he was to Paul 2,000 years ago. And he promises us to meet us where we are and show us the way that we can go. Dear Heavenly Father, I pray that you would please help. I pray, Father, that you would hear the cries of our hearts, all that we've brought with us today. Father, life is so complicated and messy in so many different ways for all of us. I pray that you would rest your favor upon us today. I pray, Father, that you would shine a light into the darkest corners of our hearts. I pray, Father, where we feel discouraged, where we feel exhausted, where we feel overwhelmed, that you would meet us where we are and show us the way out. Father, I pray that you would replace our despair with joy. I pray that you would replace our grief with hope. I pray, Father, that our fear would be overwhelmed by our faith in you, that there is nothing too hard for you, nothing that you cannot do. Father, I pray that where we are weak, you would make us strong. Father, I pray that where we have grown weary, you would lift us up, empower us to be the men and women you've called us to be one more time. I pray, Father, that we would find the space in our heart to invite Christ in, to stand in these gaps of life with us. I pray, Father, that the light of Christ would shine on us in all that we do, and that our hearts, our homes, our communities would be filled by the hope that you aren't done yet, and there's nothing you cannot do. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.